Jax Media, helping give fighters and fight promoters the edge to get noticed and pound through to success. At Jax Media, we know how difficult it can be to get sponsorships for your fights or fighters. Don't miss out on prime opportunities. Showcase your fight history, stats, bio, sponsorship rate, and clickable links to your online and social media platforms with a custom media kit. Media kits starting as low as $50. Also, ask about our custom Facebook page setup, apps, fighter and fight promotion websites, and more. Visit us online today at www.jaxmedia.ca. Jax Media, design with an edge.
All right, everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday night edition of MMA Madhouse Live. Cubicle to the Cage recap show. You guys know how we do it every week. We have the madman behind the scenes, the guy who created this monster that is the number one MMA television show in the world. Boyd will be joining us momentarily. Before we do that, like always, I want to give a big shout out to Draco Impact Sports. These guys, from top to bottom, have everything you need, the best gear, and follow Cubicle to the Cage and Draco on Thursday nights when RadX TV shows the episodes of Cubicle to the Cage, and tweet and win free stuff, man. They give away some killer stuff. Lapaki, my partner in crime, as always, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. When did it change from Draco Impact Armor?
I was just recently notified when I asked about, we're working with James, you know James, Finley.
Yeah.
We're working on him to get some new audio commercials, not only for this show, but for all the Madhouse production shows. And he told me that it's now Draco Impact Sports.
Wow. I kind of like the armor, but whatever, man. Not my business.
Dude, yeah.
Here's a funny story, dude. So, Draco Impact Armor, you know, I've been working with Madhouse for like a year and a half now, probably a little bit more. Dude, I totally thought I was already, like, following them on Facebook, and then the other day I thought I wasn't. This happens to me very frequently where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm already following those people. I'm not even worried about it. And then, like, later I'll be like, man, I'm not following these guys? What the hell's going on here? I don't know if that means I follow too many people or what, but every week I find some company that I think I'm following, and I'm like, wow, I'm not following these people at all.
Hey, you know, my favorite was, believe it or not, and this is going to get you because of how excited I got the other day with Buff, but I liked their fan page, I guess, you know, but I didn't like the company's page. I didn't know that. When he sent me the link and asked me to like it, I'm like, you already liked it. I went there and I was like, oh, I don't. How is that possible?
Yeah.
Even you are suspicious of that company. How is, you know, it's like, wow. But speaking of huge fans.
That means that I'm probably not following them either then. I probably just like the fan page.
yeah, you know, it's funny because I sat down and had a great conversation and explained to the guy how big you are, a fan of this organization. So, yeah, it's funny. But somebody I do
follow. He's probably like, yeah, right. You guys don't even like the page. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yep. Big fans you are. Big fans you guys are. Whatever.
Hey, big fans of this guy right here, man. Boyd Sharp, the master behind. We're going to get him on right now.
I wonder if you're calling the right number.
I have this written down as house number. We should give it out.
Hello, hello.
Hey, boy.
Hello, Boyd Sharp.
Gentlemen.
Are we calling the right number tonight?
I use the term loosely.
Oh.
Thank you for the package today. I appreciate it.
No problem, sir.
I'll wait for Skippy.
I'll get the other ones off to you as soon as they're off the presses.
Yeah.
Doing a little end run.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Skippy is no longer a factor in my world.
I know that's not true.
That's right. You know, he's a tough guy. He really likes to say stuff, but he's still going to call me and be like, can I get a copy even though he's got it, just so he still feels relevant.
Oh, wow.
Boyd, you had a week off. You know, guys, back to the swing of things. And big shout out to Radek for throwing a marathon coming up. Big shout out.
Yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
Yeah. You know, first of all, we know we're talking that you never, realized that. I'm gonna mute him for a second because that is just annoying. That you never thought that this would take off as big as it has, and now you have a marathon of your cubicle to the cage.
I know this is huge. I mean, when the show started, I kind of just floated out there to the president of the network saying, I find that I really get addicted to these shows when there's a marathon on and I see like several episodes in a row, and then I realize, this is awesome, and I tune in for the rest, whatever's left, or I go back and get the other episodes, or I tune in for other seasons, so it'd be fantastic if we could do that. And he was kind of like, yeah, well, that's not something we do for every show. It needs to be a marketable product and something that we're looking to promote and push down the road. So for them to now be coming to us saying that over the holiday season, when the network, when Radex is actually free for all Canadian carriers for the next 2 months, they're actually going to run it there, tells me that this is something they really want to get eyeballs on. And that feels awesome, man. It feels terrific.
This week is episode 8. Folks out there, MMAMadhouse.com and Top News Canada are going to have the blogs when you guys want to read what we're talking about and you guys want to continue to follow the show until the American debut happens. But, this week was an interesting show. Kind of heartbreaking probably for some fans and probably just as exciting for others to see the progression of one group and kind of the closure of another.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, it was really tough. When we could really see the writing on the wall, we could see who Peter was really starting to push and to lean towards. And then we had situations like Jock. Jock told me several months before, obviously, that his wife was pregnant, and we were probably a little over halfway through the program then, I guess. And he said, "You have kids. You know what it's going to be like when the baby comes, and I want to be there to support my wife." And I think it was a foregone conclusion for him that he was going to quit whenever the baby came, because Jock came to the program in a unique fashion. He's part of a comedy duo called Luke and Jock, and one of their shticks is they go all over the place auditioning for reality shows. They've been on American Idol twice, they've been on Canadian Idol a couple of times, they've been on a host of other reality shows, and what they do is they go to these reality shows, they get rejected, but then they use that rejection as a stepping stone. Maybe they make a small connection. Maybe they meet an important person. Maybe they get a cool idea from their rejection. And they take that failure and they turn it into a success. It's an awesome idea. It's an awesome life lesson for anybody. But anyway, he came into Cubicle to the Cage expecting to walk in on day one, try out, get turned down, and move on. And then once he was actually picked and we wanted to see what he had and what he could bring to the program, turns out he's just an absolutely super guy and a phenomenally strong guy. Peter talks about it all the time, even now. He's never seen anybody Jock's weight with the strength that he has. I mean, by a factor of two. He has like some kind of superhuman strength. The guy needs to be like dragged off to a lab somewhere and tested by the CDC, because I think he got infected by some radioactive spider or something in the past. I mean, he was a blood of a bitch to grapple with, because technique out the window. If he grabbed a hold of something, you weren't getting it back. So, he fell in love with the sport. It was awesome to see. I mean, he knew a little bit about martial arts, and he's a real bright guy and could do some research. But, I mean, he really, really did fall in love with the training. He loves to work hard. He loves the feeling of success. He liked the jiu-jitsu. Like I said, any smart guy or girl who starts doing jiu-jitsu will get hooked pretty quick when they start seeing the puzzle that sport is. And I think that really, really connected with Jock. And it was awesome to be training with him, and it was heartbreaking when he finally made the decision that family had to come first for him.
Now, you know, that's something in the show they really, you know, focused on him in episode 8, and you could see his passion, the way he talked about the sport. He's truly got an ingrained love for the sport now, and especially, you know, some of the aspects he seems to like even more. I can't wait. We're going to get to talk to him tonight, folks. He'll be joining us a little later. I'm curious to see how everything has gone on with him since that show, you know, how much of a passion he's kept up with and stuff. You know, I believe, was it Steve? Didn't he get into some, was it ankle injury?
Sorry, what was that?
Didn't Steve have like an ankle injury or something this week?
No, Steve didn't sustain any specific injury. We were all kind of dealing with a lot of injuries because we'd been training with the pros for quite a while but at that point, and we were learning enough that we were being a little bit clumsy and hurting one another more often than we were earlier in the program. So the big thing for that episode, other than Jock's story, was the physiotherapy help that we got from Nova Physiotherapy. A friend of another fighter, a friend of Ricky Goodall's, approached us and said, hey, I know what you guys are doing. You guys look like you're pretty damn banged up over there. Why don't you swing by the physio clinic and help you guys out and keep you going? So I was like, oh, that sounds like a cool idea. So I went by, and when I did, it was like, oh, my God, like, why did we train this long without strength and conditioning coaching and a kinesiologist getting our form right and a massage therapist and a physiotherapist fixing up all our busted bits? If we'd done that right from the start, I mean, it just would have been a different program, especially for us older guys, because working with Robbie was just, it was fantastic. And not only did he volunteer to see us, he said, you know what, like, forget about your insurance, forget about if you can afford it or not. He said, I usually come in early on Tuesday mornings to do a bunch of paperwork. Why don't you guys all come in, whoever wants to come in, every Tuesday morning for the rest of the program. I'll give you all the physio help you need, do your proper assessments, and offer any support that I can. And he did that, like, for over half the program. It was unbelievable. So generous of him. And we want to give back to him any way we can.
Now, we're talking about Robbie McDonald, as everybody out there knows.
Nova Physiotherapy.
Do you think maybe some of his background in martial arts kind of maybe was a string pulling on his heart when he saw what you guys were doing?
Oh yeah, absolutely, totally. I mean, he was open about that. I mean, Robbie is around my age, and he has a black belt in Taekwondo, and he's done some competing, and he's involved with a lot of amateur sport in the area. So he understood the allure of what we were trying to do, and I think that's the main reason why he was interested in supporting us and helping us out any way that he could. And he's just a supporter of local mixed martial arts. I mean, he works with a lot of the guys.
Now, you know, for you personally, what was the single best thing that he taught you or helped you learn about conditioning or strengthening different parts of your, you know, your body?
Yeah, I mean, he really tried to drill home to us that you have to work within the limitations of the body that you have, and you have to work around the injuries that you have. Because you know, you've met Peter on a couple of occasions now. You know what Peter is going to demand of you in the gym. And I'm not saying you should ever give your coach less than what they want if you can give it to them. But if you can't give it to them, if that's going to mean the end of the road for your training, for your journey, for preparing for a fight, I mean, you're a grown-ass man. You have to have some input into what you can and can't do. So through working with Robbie, I would say to Peter, you know what, Peter? I got to tie my right arm to my body, and I'm just going to, like, drill left hooks, like, 5,000 times tonight. Forget about my right arm. I don't have one. Or if Peter's like, okay, we're doing jumping push-ups, I'd be like, you know what? I will do double the number of crunches, but I need to get this shoulder better. I'm not going to do the push-ups. So I started making those smart decisions, and that was the only thing that got me through the program, to be quite honest.
Now, you guys, you know, you're talking about changing up maybe the way you worked out due to, you know, your injury so that you could be healthier longer and try to sustain this program even longer, you and all the Cubes, how physically different and demanding was it when you guys went to the beach?
Yeah, that was crazy. Peter talked about it a whole bunch because he talked about when he was down in Brazil, they would do that sometimes. They'd say, oh, it's a great day. Let's we're finished rolling. We'll just run down to the beach and do some drills, do some running. And we did the wrestling on the beach. Oh, my God. I mean, it was like being in molasses. Somebody would start running at you, and like you'd try to move out of the way, but the sand would just shift under your feet, and boom, you just get blasted. It kind of took the advantage away for the bigger guys a little bit because I know Sebastian, who generally just bulldozed me in class every single time. On the beach, he didn't have that explosive power because he sank in the sand, and it really made a little bit of technique go a lot further than you would think.
Well, no, you know, I found it very interesting, you know, just watching that part of it because, you know, you guys all know me. I don't train. I don't claim to be a fighter. I enjoy this sport as a fan and have for all my life, you know, basically 40 years of it. I've been watching, you know, combat sports in Europe where I grew up and then to the States. But I never really thought about the physical nature of training in sand versus training in a gym. You know, I mean, it sounds stupid to say, you know, once you sit back and think about it, you start to realize, well, it makes sense, you know, but just even the throws to be slammed on gritty sand has to be a completely different sensation to your body than being slammed on a, you know, plastic smooth mat.
Actually, you know what, that being slammed in the sand was just way better. It was a little more abrasive on the skin, but from an impact, it was awesome. It was way better than being slammed on the mat. For me, it was, even if it was tougher, to be out there that day with my family and with my kids, and we're running around in the surf, and my wife is, like, relaxing with the baby in the shade, and, I mean, that was such an awesome day that, any intensity of training, I would have appreciated it anyway. It was just great to have that family time. And then another time, Peter took us to the Canada Game Center pool, and we did all kinds of drills underwater. We did, like, punching drills and stuff, which was awesome for those of us who had injuries because everything is slowed down and you don't have that kind of snap at the end of your punches because you're in the water. And then we did we were in about chest-deep water, and we did Thai plum drills.
Now, I was curious about that because that's a very, very technical, you know, aspect of a game, especially in Thai, being able to work, you know, that plum and throw the knees correctly. And with all that water trying to bring your knees up, I mean, it had to be like a slow motion knee.
Oh, it was exhausting, man. There was times when we were just about drowning because you'd get so tired you couldn't swim to the side.
Now, of the two, which did you find more physically draining on you, the sand or the water?
I would say the water. And again, some of that maybe was because I was just on such a high out there at the beach with my family and everything, beautiful day. I did. The pool training was really good. I really wish the opportunity had been there for us to do a lot more of that. I know I've seen enough of these sort of behind-the-scenes prime times that they do on the pro athletes that a lot of guys do use water, especially when they're recovering from an injury. And, man, I can really see the benefit of it, totally.
Dude, water is great to work out in because it limits all the impact on your joint.
Yep,
which is
exactly.
Kind of the best aspect of it. Like when I worked in the health club business, we used to have a lot of people that would come in with fibromyalgia, and that was the best way for them to work out and, you know, to start kind of counteracting the negative effects of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
Hey, boy, what did your family think of being able to watch you train that day you guys were all at the beach? Or were they too busy at the beach?
And they were kind of busy at the beach. It was so, for the kids, it was so second nature at that point that I don't think they thought it was any strange thing. I mean, as far as they were concerned, it was just the same as when I'm wrestling with them. If I'm wrestling with them on the floor, they just think it's the same thing.
Now, how many times did you get one of your kids in a rear naked choke after you started the class?
After I started training?
Yeah.
Oh, hundreds. I'm not gonna lie. I slapped a heel hook on my 3-year-old one time.
How long did the tap take?
He cried for his mother, and then I ran away. So. she doesn't respond to tapping. If I tap, she just keeps beating me. So.
That's a fine line you got to walk there.
Yeah, that's right.
Skippy's still learning about that line with his wife.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to know when to run.
Well, you know, I figured it out, I think, because I'm on number 4, and the first 3, I just didn't get it right. So we're trying number 4.
4th time's a charm.
It's like a car, man. You get a hot rod when you're young. You think it's cool, and then you realize it costs too much, maintenance, all that. You get rid of it. You trade it in more for, like, a heavy-duty truck, and it just bogs down. You can't drive it because the gas is too expensive. I got me a nice electric car now. It's got good gas mileage. It's cheap to run. Life's good.
I am not having this conversation, just for the record. Honey, if you're listening to this podcast, I was not involved.
I know Lepaki right now is thinking, I know his wife's not in the studio.
I'm thinking, I'll just message Carly a link to tonight's show and let her listen on her own.
Well, remember last week, executive producer Fat Cat was sitting in the hot tub drinking wine micro-brewed beer. Yeah, well, we got family over tonight, and they're sleeping in the room next to my office, so I'm actually in the driveway in my van, and it's snowing.
Nice. I'm driving through a fog storm going up I-5 commuting home from work.
Yowza.
I'm sitting in a studio that's 70 degrees with what's left of a steak dinner and a baked potato and salad. So I think I might win this.
Now, Boyd, in this week's episode, I mean, episode 8, which everybody's seen by now, and if not, you know, tough luck at this point. It was a really strong episode for a lot of you that were questioning where you were at and your ability when you actually got to meet with the commission. How nervous were you before that day started?
I was nervous, but I also wasn't nervous. I'll put it to you this way. Imagine you're standing on the beach during a hurricane. If you're on the beach during a hurricane, it's going to be a tempest. There's wind and there's rain and there's sand flying everywhere and everything is just complete chaos. Okay, that's the way my mind was a lot of the time. But now imagine you're, 100 feet below the surface of the water. Okay, the hurricane is still going on up there, but it's much less. There's some a light swell, and you're moving around a little bit, but you're not up there being, like, whipped by sand and rain and all that horrible stuff. So I kind of had the same two things going at the same time. On one level, I was just in complete and utter panic and chaos, but there was also a part in the back of my mind that was calm and saying, listen, you've done everything or nearly everything that you could do. It's out of your hands now. You don't have to worry about it. Just go in and do what you know how to do, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. So I kind of had both of those things going on at the same time. And then if you think from outer space, if you're looking down at the planet, the same guy is standing there on the beach or under the water during that hurricane, but from space it's just going to look like a calm, beautiful, blue and white planet. And I hate to use the word spiritual. I'm not an overly spiritual guy, but that's the kind of spiritual mindset that I was starting to develop at that point. It was like, whatever comes. Whatever happens. All I can do is my best at any one moment, and then anything that happens as a result of all of those moments added together is what's going to happen, and I don't have to worry about that big picture.
Hey, Boyd, I want to talk to you before we get Jock on here with us. You come into the gym, there's 10 of you that are still remaining out of the original 36 that had started the program, and I believe it was Sebastian in your blog that had pointed out, you know, the message it sent him subconsciously. What did it do for you mentally to walk in there and know at this point you had made the final 10?
Yeah, it was great. That's where that calm that I was feeling came from. I felt like I hadn't accomplished my goal yet, but I'd accomplished a part of it. I'd done something, and I'd survived to that point, and I felt like I belonged. That's the best way that I can describe it, is I felt like I belonged where I was, and I'd earned my spot. And that gave me at least some confidence going into the test. We can talk about the test after, but that's how I felt going into it.
Now, did you see maybe that same kind of confidence in some of the other cubes?
I think everybody was pretty nervous. And I think Steve Goodfellow said it best. We were more nervous of Peter than we were for ourselves, because if the commission came in, looked at all 10 of us and said, "Peter, these clowns don't know enough to fight, forget it, they're not getting licenses," I mean, how embarrassing would that have been for him?
That's a very valid point. Very valid. Well,
the fighter's life has so many pressures that don't involve them. Was that maybe one of the most shocking things that you discovered through the course of this show? Like, I mean, you're talking about this pressure here where you guys were really wanting to perform well more for Peter than for yourselves. I mean, how often did you find that to be the case up to this point in the show? And was that something that maybe happened so often you were like, wow, I never really realized this aspect?
Yeah, it totally did. I mean, the first sense we got of that was that very first night that Peter took us to the fights at the casino, where we saw Nathan get knocked out. And we saw how supportive everybody was of him and back in the locker room. So, yeah, through the whole process, I realized that I don't know if there's a fighter out there that fights for themselves. They're fighting either for their family that has sacrificed to enable them to do it. They're fighting for their trainers. They're fighting for their coach. They're fighting for their training partners. They're fighting for damn near everybody else, and not necessarily the reasons why they started training or wanted to fight initially in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's something that a lot of outsiders don't really quite understand.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it was around this time, or maybe a little bit later in the program, when for the very, very first time, I had a flash come in my mind of my son being much older than he is now, maybe being a teenager or something, and stumbling on this DVD set sitting up in the closet somewhere, and put it on and go, wow, geez, my dad did this. And then wondering, was he going to be embarrassed by what I'd done? Was he going to be inspired by what I'd done? Like, how he was going to look at it? And that was an added level of pressure that I had to now think, is I'm leaving behind some kind of a legacy here that my kids are going to have, and I damn well better make sure it's a good one.
When did you come to that realization?
I don't remember exactly when that was. It was certainly after our meeting with the commission, and it might have been after New York. It might have been on the drive to New York. Because I know we drove between the drive down and the drive back, I drove for like 35 hours or something. And so I had a lot of time to mull things over. So it might have actually been on that drive, or just when we were getting back, that came to mind.
Is the pressure of the legacy you're leaving your kids maybe greater than the pressure that you feel to maybe please Peter or at least make him feel like he's not wasting his time? Or are they just so different that you really can't compare the two?
Yeah, they're very different. They're very different, and I think I held both of them at the same time, and they weren't mutually exclusive in any way. I mean, I certainly wanted to do Peter proud, but doing my kids proud and leaving behind something or doing something that they could be proud of was infinitely more important to me. It didn't come into my mind until much, much, much later. But when it did come into my mind, it became a major motivation.
Well, and the nice thing about that is that, you know, by maybe leaving that great legacy for your kids, in turn, you're also going to be appeasing Peter, or at least make him feel like he's not wasting his time. So, I mean, you could definitely kill two birds with one stone in that aspect from your point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were both leading to the same goal, for sure.
Hey, and, you know, speaking of legacies, I think somebody who's definitely left a legacy of to the fans, you know, who have fallen in love with, you know, him as a Cube. Jock Hiltz, we have him live, so let's talk with him a little bit about his whole experience on the show. Hey, welcome to Madhouse Live, buddy.
How are you doing?
Hey,
how you doing,
buddy?
Buddy, I like it.
Hey, you're family now. We know enough
I
about
am
you.
Family. Sorry?
We know enough about you from the show. It's almost like you've become family to a lot of the fans, you know, especially in episode 8, you know, it was to see you and how passionate you were was just, it was great from a TV point of view as a fan.
Excellent. It was torture for me as a participant. It was the hardest. It was so hard. I wanted to step back if I could for when you're talking about, you know, were we training to please Peter or that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that question?
Yes.
I remember the first 3 months, and this never came across in the episode, at the end of the episodes, but I remember the first 3 months, all 35 of us were like, Peter was so hard and stone cold towards us, we all thought that he basically hated us. And, like, if we got a crack of a smile or, like, at any type of acknowledgement, it was like, oh, my gosh, Peter acknowledged me in that exercise. And it was, like, a huge breath of fresh air. And I just thought it was really funny hearing you guys talk about that. And that it was – we were – I think the first 3 months we were all training so hard for Peter's approval or just Peter's attention to think that we don't suck or that we have a chance.
That's very interesting. Go ahead, Skippy.
I was just going to say, for you in the beginning, you know, you had a friend with you. Did that make it any easier coming into this program with somebody that you knew so well?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. With Luke and I came in. We never came in because we liked MMA. We're TV junkies. We're comedians, entertainers. We actually were shooting a web show right now, Hump Day, self-plug there. Check it out on YouTube. But so we're best buddies, and so coming into this world that we had no idea about or even liked at that time was terrifying because we knew what kind of torture essentially we'd be going through. So to know that we had somebody beside us who would, like, on a personal level that we could cheer us on was so – he just popped in the room now – was so comforting and relieving just to have that person there, yeah.
At what point in the show did you notice maybe the pilot light or the switch flipped for you and MMA really became something you were passionate about?
I would say within the first week or so, just jumping in like feet first, like this wasn't like if you go to an MMA gym and you just start training casually. This was going in from zero to a full-on fight camp, basically. This was intense training to get us up to speed. And so within the first week or two, I went from not being able to watch, literally I couldn't watch MMA on TV, like the ground and pounds, the blood, it made me queasy, to a point where I'm watching every fight, and if I can't watch it live, I got to find it on the internet somewhere, I got to catch up on the fights. Like, within a very short time of being into it, it switched that this is an amazing sport. This isn't brutal two guys just beasting it out. This is an actual sport that takes a lot of skill, a lot of discipline, and this is a world that I really enjoy being in. And when you get to like the community of fighters and guys training was so welcoming that made it just it made the transition so quick. It's just because these people accepted you, who are these like amazing fighters, and they accepted you as into their, you know, their private training space.
Yeah, because for me as a viewer, hearing you like, you know, have to come to that realization that you may be stepping away in episode 8, you know, not necessarily from the training, but from the fight opportunity so you could spend more time with your family. I think for me, that was like the one thing where I was like, wow, man, I was like, that was like one of the guys where I figured he was just going to goof his way through. But then he like, it totally like switched for you. And I think that's amazing. And I hope that the people that watch this show see that how that can happen.
Yeah, I think everyone had Luke and I like just counted off as goofballs, which we were the first day or first couple days of being in. We're just like TV cameras. This is what we do. But yeah, I hope it translated as well that this went from being just a spotlight opportunity to this is something that I really love. And I haven't been back to the gym any amount since then. This year has been crazy. But Thursday, I'm hoping to get back on the mats with Boyd and the rest of the guys for the first time. So I'm really excited about that. I'm getting a gi lined up so I can go back to do some gi jiu-jitsu, and it's super exciting because, yeah, this became something that I love it now. And yeah, there's no other way about it.
Now, striking or grappling, which aspect did you prefer or do you prefer?
I'm going to say rolling, the jiu-jitsu, the grappling. I think for no other reason, I'm going to be straight up, is I really don't like getting hit in the face. And I just don't like getting hit in the face. So the jiu-jitsu the jiu-jitsu is something that allowed me to, I think, excel a little bit better because I came in with a better core strength than a lot of the other guys coming in. So I felt like I had an advantage and felt like I'd excel a bit better in the rolling because of that.
Now, that was something that Boyd mentioned to us earlier in the show, was that you had, and Peter had made the remark, that you had freakish strength. Was that just like, did you come from a country background, or were you just a gym rat?
I really don't know, because in the gym, I'm not, like, a bit of both. I grew up in the country, but I wasn't doing, like, massive manual labor, and in the gym, like, I do deadlifts and squats, but I'm not doing any great amount of weight, like nothing at all, so I was coming in expecting to be weaker than a lot of people. So I don't know if it's just a combination of the fact that I do work out and spend a fair bit of time in the gym and just genetics that I have this caveman. What did Peter call me, Boyd? Cro-Magnum?
Cro-Magnon strength.
There it is. So I think it's a bit of both.
And
I was hoping that name would catch along the series.
You know, Jock, coming into this show, you guys, you know, kind of got known for, you know, going and trying out for different shows. With you knowing coming in here that there's a good chance that you might not even make it past tryouts, at what point after tryouts did you realize, okay, I made it, this is no longer a joke? What was it that switched on you that day that was like, hey, we're in this for real this time?
I think initially our goal was just to do the audition, get some camera time, make a funny excerpt that they could edit in on the first episode, put that notch in our belt and move on. But as soon as we got the text or the call or the email or whatever it was saying that we made the cut to be on the series, for me it switched. It went from, okay, we did the audition, we got the exposure there, now we're going into a series where we are potentially a main character. And so at that point, I went into it as I got to do something to make myself stand out so that I can be followed above the other 35, because I know how TV works. They're not going to follow all 35. They're going to pick out storylines. They're going to pick out people of interest. And so I, at that point, initially started building my character, still not necessarily liking MMA or not even know if I'm going to like the training, but knowing that with my TV interest that this is an opportunity. I saw a great opportunity in the show, and so I was going to capitalize that, Luke and I both, to capitalize on that. And so, yeah, literally as soon as we got the call saying we were in, went to from goof-offs to, okay, let's use this to our advantage.
Now,
what were you originally basing your character off of?
Originally, our character were based off of the whole shtick that we do outside of this is that we're just two bums living out of a van, playing music, just kind of never really growing up out of high school. And that's kind of the characters that we build on all the other shows and stuff that we do. And so that was what we came in doing. I think there's a clip that got edited out that we were seagull breeders and we went out with traps and Tidby filmed us chasing these seagulls and living out of a van, and there's one scene that made my exit where I dump a jug of gasoline on an open fire, and what they didn't show was the thing nearly exploded, and it threw us all back, and the gas jug I was holding in my hand, the end of it was on fire, and I'm running around like with this jug of gas on fire in my hand, and I jam it in a snowbank, and so we got all this great hilarious stuff that never made the cut, and so I'm hoping to get that footage to use. At some point.
When, you know what, Lopaki, we need to see him do a guest appearance on Monkey Town.
What's Monkey Town?
Oh, dude, that would be Monkey Town is... I don't even still know how... I've watched this trailer for Monkey Town. It's on, what was it? Hemming's House. That's right.
Monkey
Town. The production company... And we went on their website because we had the producer of the show on last week. So Skippy and I were, like, perusing the website, and we came across this trailer for a show called Monkey Town. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't seen it, all I can tell you is to go watch it and then think about it for a minute and then watch it again.
Okay. I will tell you the same about our new web show called Hump Day on YouTube. I can send you guys – get Boyd to send you the links. Same thing. Watch it and then think about it and then rewatch it.
I love that. That's like the best way to like tell, you know, just tell somebody about something that's cool. Watch it, think about it, and then watch it again. And then you can call me.
Now, Jock, you know, this has got it, not only the aspect of becoming a fan of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and learning from such a great, great individual as Peter, and to meet the friends that you did in the cubes, but to open a door to be able to help you guys, you know, stretch out in your what you're trying to do in your long-term career and do something like Hump Day. How important was that to you?
For Cuba to the Cage, it's in particular?
If you to do that and build yourself for this kind of, you know, life, career.
Sorry, I missed the question. I apologize.
I think we all are. Jack, sometimes this happens where Skippy has a question in his head. But he couldn't tell us what it is if we gave him a $100 bill for every word.
Okay, your ability to do the show has obviously led to a larger fan base, which has given you a chance to run with Hump Day. How important was this building a fan base on the show for the rest of what you're trying to do in your career, and that's be a comedian and an entertainer?
Oh, this every opportunity we get, we hold it as very, very valuable. But with Cubicle to the Cage, as soon as I chatted with Boyd, like on the tryouts, I loved the concept. And then once it started building steam, it was obvious that just with how big MMA is and the potential that this show has, knowing what Hemmings and those guys can do, like I just saw a tremendous potential. And that really fueled me to push myself on those training days when you're crying in the parking lot because, you know, Gavin Tucker's in there and Mike Malott. So knowing the potential that this show has really fueled it, and that's what really pushed me on because, I know this show has a lot of potential, and building a character on that I knew was invaluable on our career.
Jock, when Peter first brought you guys in with the pros,
yeah.
Had you abandoned the character at that time? And then what was that first practice with those guys like for you?
After a few months, I kind of got the feeling that to maintain a position as a bit of a main character, I knew that the show wasn't going in the goofy direction. So I was switching in and out. I do a bit of both. And so for the most part of training, I was serious Jock. This is who I was. During interviews, we would do both. We'd do some goofy stuff, and then I'd do straight-up stuff because I knew that I wanted to make sure that I got cut in as much as possible. But the first time with the pros, I actually think it was the episode where it shows Gavin's just beating the snot out of Morteza, and we're in the gym with the doors open. It was scary. I think that was the first time where I was circling the parking lot, like debating, why am I going in? Why am I subjecting myself to this? Like, and I'm sure Boyd has mentioned it before as well. There were tears and just fear. Like it was straight up fear going in because you're going from guys who are at your level and bumping around that point to people with, you know, 6-0 records, 7-0 records, have, you know, trained in Thailand, have fought here, and has done all this. Like, it was scary. I don't know any other way to put it.
And then what were your thoughts after that practice?
I'm still alive. I'm still alive. I think I can do another one.
Did you feel reinvigorated, and did that kind of maybe help you maybe take the training to the next level at that point?
Yeah, definitely. There was there's definitely a sense of accomplishment knowing that you you trained with some of these guys so far ahead of you, and you held your own, and you know, at the very least, you were able to hold your own and make it through class. So that did give a huge burst of energy to kind of continue on. It still wasn't any less scary. It still didn't make you suck any less. It was just you had motivation knowing that, okay, I'll get through another class. I'll learn more. This is going to push me harder, faster. And that in itself, I think, is what kind of drove you to go back into the class the next day.
So, you know, when you first approached this whole program, obviously being the funny guy that you are, how many people took you serious about doing this?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if anyone ever takes me serious.
Boy, can you expand upon that?
Yeah, maybe Boy can have more insight on that.
Yeah, I think Jock, he nailed it. I mean, the first few weeks, nobody, myself included, expected for Jock and Luke to stick around. But by the time we'd hit the 2 or 3 month mark, and that's kind of when Peter was beating people out of the program purely with intense training, like cardio-type training. I noticed something about Jock that I also noticed about Steve Goodfellow, and that was whether someone was watching or somebody wasn't watching, they never cheated a lick. Like, if they were told to do 452 crunches, they did 452. They didn't do 451. They didn't do 450. They did 452. And it didn't matter what Peter asked. If he wanted something done, they did everything in their power to do it to the best of their ability. And that was something, I think, perhaps even unique in the whole program. I certainly, I'm not too ashamed to say, I cheated on times when I just felt like I couldn't do it anymore. But it seemed like Steve and Jock, they just weren't willing to do that. If something was asked of them, they were going to do it. And when I saw, started to think that maybe that there was something else going on here, and he was somebody who was going to excel and stick with it.
Now, Jock, were you more surprised that you made the show or that Luke made the show?
I'm surprised that we both made the show, that any of us made the show. But at the same time, we kind of thought we stood a really good chance, just knowing how TV shows work, and doing enough shows where, like, we know who to connect with behind the scenes to build a relationship with, to make ourselves stand out. We know how to kind of make a connection and make people, you know, as bad as it sounds or as self-righteous as it sounds, kind of to make people like us and want us to be around. And so we went in there just being ourselves and hoping to do exactly that, like whatever we could to get noticed, to make it on the show. And so we sucked up the Void really hard. We sucked up with Greg really hard. You know, we just sucked up to who we had to suck up to make it happen. So I think we were always surprised, but we kind of went in with enough confidence that we stood a good chance, as good a chance, if not better, than other people sitting there.
Yeah, Luke had
sucking up.
Luke had family and business obligations that prevented him from really getting into the program like Jock did. And Jock, I could tell, and Greg could tell from talking to him very quickly, that he was going to be great on camera. He was going to be able to tell a story. He was going to be able to give perspective to other people's stories, because he's that kind of a person who kind of really knows what's going on around him. But as far as Peter was concerned, Peter didn't give a shit. Peter just wanted somebody who was going to be able to either A, fight, or B, be a valuable training partner for the people who are going to fight. And Peter is better to speak about this than I am, but I think Jock, through his work ethic, just slowly earned Peter's respect, and that's why he stayed as part of a program.
Now, did you attempt to kiss up to Peter? And if so, how did that work out?
Sorry, I started to talk when you talked, and I missed the first part you said.
Did you attempt to kiss up to Peter as well, and how did that work out? Or was he able to?
No, I think I may have tried to initially by cracking a joke, and his stone cold demeanor, it just shut me down initially. So I'm like, oh crap, like my charm, my wit, my everything I rely on is not working here.
I'm sitting here chuckling because I actually saw that happen on like three different occasions, and it was kind of like a big fat bumblebee hitting a windshield at 100 miles an hour.
It was a train wreck. And so from that point, that scared me. That's, I think that's what scared me the most, or was the most deflating for me, if there was a point, was knowing that I was coming in with a handicap or as a shtick or as the William Hung of the crowd, coming in as that added bonus or whatever you want to call it. I, in my mind, Luke and I both assumed Peter had written us off completely, and so we always felt like that we were getting less attention than anyone else in class, less acknowledgement, and just kind of like shoot off in the corner to do your own thing, and maybe that's what was happening, and like Boyd had enlightened on that, he just kind of wrote us off, and then over time, as he saw the progression, he warmed up more. But yeah, that wasn't fun.
Now, how much did you maybe want to go, even knowing that you weren't going to fight? Was there a part of you that wanted to go through the licensing procedure just to see if you could get approved?
Yeah, absolutely. This was I'm like Boyd in the sense that when I get something in my head, I like to run it through to completion. And so it was very hard. I mean, it was a bittersweet moment when I realized I'm not going to be able to train to fight just because I want to be a present father, and I didn't want to be gone 6 days a week when my child's a week old, and like I didn't want to miss the first year of my child's life, and I knew that type of sacrifice it was going to take. But on the same token, it was like, I don't have to get kicked in the face anymore. I don't have to do burpees till I puke. And like it was like this bittersweet realization that I don't have to do this. But then on the same token, it's like it was a point of shame for me because I'm like, I want to walk this through. I don't want to have any what ifs left in my life when I'm 65. I want to walk out every opportunity to its fullest, to experience it to its fullest, and to be able to say that I took a pro MMA fight, I was able to get licensed, I was able to do this, I didn't step down because of anything. And so that was actually a tough spot on me just because I had to go against basically my core value system, like something that I hold very, very dear is following out in completion what you start. And so, yeah, it was a very weird spot for me to be in.
Now, have you gotten an itch just for the BJJ part? Not the cage and not the show, but just to be able to go roll. How's that itch, you know? How long did it take before you started going, man, I'd really just like to go roll again?
I don't think I ever lost all the elements of wanting to be there. I wanted to and still wanted to be on the mats for jiu-jitsu in particular, and even Muay Thai for the training, the pad work and the light sparring. Like I never lost any desire for that. I was still, once I stopped the show and wasn't going to the gym, I was still going to the gym doing a lot of heavy bag work and a lot of the fitness routines that we were doing cardio wise with the burpees and that stuff. So I still carried on some aspects of it, but never lost the itch. But now watching it back, watching through the episodes, seeing glimpses and pieces of the training and watching parts of me and being like, oh, I didn't really suck as bad as I thought I did. I really want to get back in there. And my wife actually, she goes, if I knew that the show was going to be so good, I wouldn't have given you such a hard time for all the training you were doing. So I'm like, oh, no. Hindsight.
2020, he says.
It really is.
What did you think about, as somebody that has a television show background, as you sit and watch this now, what do you think about how the show's turned out? And what were your expectations of the show maybe going into it?
Sitting back and watching it, I'm blown away. Knowing what felt like the cameras were never there, and when they were there, it was only one camera, no production crew whatsoever. Like it seemed like the cameras were never there. And so I was thinking, what are they going to be able to produce? Like they're never here. But watching it back, the guys at Hemmings, Greg and Tidby and Andrew McCormick, like, they did a phenomenal job for capturing for capturing character and capturing storyline, but then just getting some really beautiful footage, and it was just, I love it. The style of filming, that documentary style of filming, is what I love in particular, and they just captured it, and right down to just the color correcting they did and all that stuff. I'm in love with it, 100%.
Jock, I've said this before, and people probably think I'm joking or overstating it, but I've said before that they made this show on a budget that doesn't cover the coffee and donuts on an episode of Tough, and that's 100% true.
No, I agree with you. I've heard that from some of the crew, and that's another thing that really needs to be highlighted, the fact that they pulled off such an amazing production on a shoelace budget. I've worked on budgets like that, and it's a lot of work. You're wearing many hats, and so hats off to those guys, everyone involved, for what they pulled off with what they had to work with. I can't imagine what it would be like if they actually had a budget and we could have done some of the things that we talked about doing. Like, oh, man, it would be really cool if we could do this.
Yeah, I know. We were supposed to go to Brazil for a week. We were supposed to go to Thailand for a week. We were going to go out to the Midwest and get our asses wrestled off. And
yeah,
like,
Vegas,
yeah, we just had such great plans. Season two.
Season two,
Jock. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying too, buddy. I'll be at the audition.
Oh man, I can't imagine.
Here's something I've wondered about. In the intro to the show, you take a punch. Is the punch real, and who delivered it?
Her name is Jenna King. She's a female kickboxer. I think she splits her time between East Coast. Maybe she was out here going to school, but I think maybe she lives in Calgary or Edmonton right now. And the punch was 100% real. We filmed, that was the night I cracked a rib and did the three-hour workout at the Palookas, and so we could get enough footage for the promo. So this was quite a while ago. This is probably over 3 years ago. And we were at the very end of the night, and I said to Andrew McCormick, I said, we don't have, like, a big shot. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, we don't have me getting, like, really punched or really slammed. Like, we got nothing that really captures the evening kind of thing. And Peter overheard it, and he goes, hey, Jenna, you want to spar with Boyd? And I was like, oh, shit. As soon as I knew he was calling in a girl, I knew she was going to be really good. So anyway, we just went in, and we started sparring kind of not super light, but not really heavy, and I just waited for it to happen, and she was good enough that she found an opening, and wow. Yeah, it was real.
That's perfect.
That's great.
Yeah, the other punch Boyd took in the intro was Peter Martel, and that was a great shot.
Was cool. Jock will appreciate that. We just through the connections that we have and the fact that people just really wanted to help out this project, we got access to the Red camera, if you're familiar with that piece of equipment, and we were able to shoot Peter punching me in the face sitting in that office at, I think it was it
300 frames per second.
300 frames per second.
Yeah.
And we had a blast. It was me, McCormick, Tidby, and Peter in an office at Peter's work for about an hour and a half, taking turns punching each other in the face and then, like, rolling on the floor laughing as we watched the playback.
Who punched Peter?
I did. I got to punch Peter. I insisted.
Yeah.
Like,
it'd be the only time.
As the creator of the show, I got the rewards of punching Peter.
Yeah, Peter's like, not many people get this opportunity, so go right ahead.
Oh, man. Lepaki, go ahead. I know what you were going to ask. Why don't you ask it?
Did he threaten to hit you back immediately and then start laughing?
He laughed a lot, actually.
He did one of those fake shoulder jolts that made Boyd pee his pants.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you think about Boyd running out of the sauna during the weight cut?
No, back it up. Just ask him to talk about the sauna experience at large.
Sorry, Luke just came in trying to sound like a girl, telling me to put my pants back on.
Oh, sorry. I said, no, get Jock to talk about his experience in the sauna.
That was the worst time of my life. I took a mental breakdown or close to it. I don't do well in tight quarters, and so put that on top of the heat and on the fact that you couldn't get out. I spent most of it flat out on the floor with my lips jammed against the crack of the door trying to get some cool air just so I wouldn't freak out. Like, literally, like, it was the weirdest thing ever. You're food deprived, you're dehydrated, you're stressed, you're exhausted, and my mind just cracked, and I'd never experienced that before. And so I spent it, who was it? Who was the other guy? Who's in there?
Norm? Norm or Colin?
Colin. Colin's like, Peter, you got to let me out. I'm really susceptible to heat. I'm not joking. I had a heat stroke last summer.
I remember that.
As bad as it was there, it was still great memories and a great bonding experience for all of us. I think that moment is what kind of solidified us all as a team and a family even. Like, we went through so much torture that it was you were just locked in at that point.
What did you think about Rick not doing the weight cut?
Rick, I love that guy. I didn't at first. I just thought he was this big oaf, but there are many layers to that onion. And once you got closer to him, it was, I think, I would have loved to have him there. But I think as well, lucky son of a gun for not having to go through that. Once you're in the middle of it, you don't think about anybody else around you. You're just, it's fighting for survival. And that's just bottom line. You're just getting through the next minute.
Yes. Now, before we end up wrapping up this show, I want you to take some time, man. Any information you want to get out for fans to follow you on social media, any information about your show, anything you want to get out, thank yous, sponsors, whatever, this is your time.
Awesome. First off, big thanks to the crew at Cubicle, Boyd, for letting Luke and I both be a part of this, Peter and Titans gang for letting us be a part of it, and the guys at Hemmings. They did an amazing job. Draco for giving us all the gear. So big thanks to all those guys. It was an experience of a lifetime. But also you can follow Luke and Jock at Luke and Jock on Twitter and Instagram as well. LukeAndJock. And I think if you search that on YouTube, that's our handle as well, youtube.com/LukeAndJock. Our new show is Hump Day. Which is a Monty Python, Portlandia-style sketch comedy show with a bunch of off-the-wall stuff. So check it out. We're just filming episode 4 right now. And episode 3 goes live tomorrow every Wednesday morning. We have a new episode up, and throughout the week, bits and pieces of material fill in the gaps as well. So check it out. Hump Day, it's Luke and Jock. We are amazing. We are awesome. We are everything you need in your Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for coming on the show and hanging out. I also want to thank you as a fan of Cubicle to the Cage, man. You've definitely helped sell the show. You know, we're huge, huge fans of it in America. I mean, it's video crack to us. So
awesome.
We love it.
I'm glad I could be a part of it, and glad you enjoy my contribution. It was so much fun. I anyone else watching, if you hear of a Cubicle to the Cage audition, get your arses off the coach and check it out. It's worth every minute that you puke.
Jock, did the pros at any time, and maybe in their light hazing they maybe did to you Cubicles, use your name against you?
Use my name against me? No, I wish that would have been what they used. that would have been so nice. gosh, I don't know. I don't think it got jammed at me as much as I thought it would, or you would think it would. Usually it was just like Mike Kent. It was just straight vulgarity. Gavin was just such a nice guy. I don't think he made fun of anybody. And Mike Mallott liked to push things a little bit, but no, it never got thrown in my face, at least not to my face, maybe behind my back. Ricky Goodall may have said a few things, but not like you think it would have.
Interesting. Well, man, we really appreciate you joining us tonight, and hopefully we'll see you in some more of the upcoming episodes here. We have started.
I'm hoping I get seen in more episodes as well. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, anytime, brother, anytime, man. Hey, enjoy the rest of your night. Thank you so much. You know,
you as well. Thank you.
We're going to definitely check out your hump day. So.
Awesome. Share it, plug it, comment, subscribe. That more importantly, subscribe. We're trying to build up a YouTube following, and you guys can be like the first couple hundred. So jump on there, subscribe, and send it to everyone you know. You won't regret it.
You got it. Have a good night, brother.
Awesome, guys. You guys too.
Boyd. Hold on. I have something I need to ask Boyd about the blog and the show.
Okay.
Boyd, last week we were kind of able to lightly touch on with Peter about the Killer Instinct. And then in this episode, through your test, the commissioner actually made that same statement. And that apparently really resonated you when I was able to read the blog this week in your trip home from the gym that day and then your activities upon arrival. Was that maybe exactly what you needed to hear, or was it that you were trying to find that in yourself and that's how you ended up maybe lighting that fire?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wish it didn't have to go down that way. Because when he said that, Hubert said, listen, you don't have any killer instinct, after watching me, like, hit a bag for 2 minutes, it was probably the worst thing that anybody could have said to me at that time. Because I'd been working in the weeks up to that point. I'd really, really been working. I gave it 100%. Of what I had to try to do what Peter wanted me to do. And like you said, we touched on it last week, but I mean, I was really trying. And this guy was basically telling me, you know what? You're a failure. You're a wimp. You're a wuss. You're not a fighter. Like, I'd suffered for like 9 months. I put every ounce of myself into this. And this guy was saying, no, you don't have it. Doesn't matter how hard you work. You don't have it. And it crushed me in that moment. I remember being there after the assessment was over, and we were waiting to see if they were going to give us our licenses, and they were over talking amongst themselves. And I was like, I could hear a train going through my brain, and I just didn't talk to anybody. I just sat there in the corner, and when he came over and handed me the paper, I was kind of stunned, and I just kind of politely said, thank you. I chatted with Peter for a minute, and I think that's kind of in the episode where I'm standing in the boxing ring talking to Peter, but honest to God, I don't remember any of that because I was just, all I was thinking was, I have to get out of this gym. I need to get away from these people. I was just in a rage. I drove home, like, driving about 140 kilometers an hour. I pulled into the driveway, and I went into my shed, hung up the heavy bag that I have, and I just beat the snot out of the thing for as long as I could possibly punch. Knocked all the paint cans off the shelves, and I mean, I went in the house. I wasn't any calmer, even though I was physically tired, and that stuck with me. That stuck with me for the rest of the program. That anger, that aggression, that frustration, I snapped that night, and that never ever left me. And I think Steve Goodfellow will maybe touch on it in the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, when I read the blog, that really kind of gave me the insight that I was looking for at the conclusion of the episode. And that last, like, maybe paragraph and a half was maybe my favorite portion of the blog up to date.
Cool. I'm glad. And, I mean, I used to keep saying to people when we'd wrapped filming and Andrew was editing and I was watching little bits here and there, and I would tell people, listen, you could not write this shit. If you wrote this, people would say, no, that's not plausible, that's not believable, it's silly that would go down that way. But honest to God, that's exactly the way things played out. I'm sitting here looking at the shed right now, and I can remember as plain as day, because I don't have electricity in my shed, I was just using like the light from outside on a telephone pole. I walked in the house, I tore off my bag gloves, and I threw them down on the floor. I went out to get a glass of water, and my hands were just completely red with blood because I'd basically beaten all the flesh off my knuckles. And I was like, I snapped. That's the only term that makes any sense for what I went through that night was I snapped.
And was that what you needed to have happen?
Yeah, I think it was. And, I mean, that's not to say I came back the next day and I was a world beater and I was killing everybody, but I just had a different mindset in everything that I did. I know there's one point I can't really say because it's going to come up in the next couple of episodes, but I think my training partners really sensed it immediately as well.
That's excellent. I think that'll be an interesting twist to the rest of the opening season.
Now
I just sent you two more.
Oh, yes. Now, I know Thursday night, Radix, episode 9. What day is the marathon?
Marathon is January 2nd, so everyone can wake up nice and late from their festivities on New Year's Eve, get a nice greasy breakfast, sit back on the sofa, and watch a few hours of Cubicle to the Cage. January 2nd.
Sheboygan.
And for everybody out there, you guys can go to MMAMadhouse.com or Top MMA News and find the blogs each week from Boyd. You guys definitely can, if you got Radix TV, turn it on. Here in America, we're hoping here shortly to have a debut somewhere on American television. Otherwise, listen to the show each week at Tuesday at 6. I want to thank Draco for all they did for you guys as well as all they do for us at Madhouse and also Jackson Media. Boyd, like always, you know, I know you want to give some shout-outs and thank some people.
I want to give all the attention today to Robbie McDonald and the guys at Nova Physiotherapy. Without those guys, we never could have made it through. If you're gonna train mixed martial arts, don't wait until you get injured before you go see a physiotherapist, a strength and conditioning coach, or a kinesiologist. Save yourself a lot of worry and torment and pain and suffering, and see those guys up front and learn how to do things right. Because without Nova Physiotherapy and Robbie, I mean, we never would have made it through this program. Especially us older guys. Tip of the hat also to Collision Sports and Ricky Goodall for all the nutrition help that we got. We were going into this blind. We had no idea how to eat or what to eat or when to eat, and he just gave us such support and assistance as we went through the end of the program. Can't forget Hanzo Gracie Academy in New York coming up next week. Life-altering experience for one of the cubes, certainly, and just a phenomenal experience for all of us. They welcomed us in there like we were family. I mean, it was unbelievable. In the short time that we spent there, jiu-jitsu went from being a sport for me to being a religion. It's just absolutely phenomenal to see the sport in that environment. Just absolutely fantastic. And Igor and Gregor and all the other coaches there, they just gave us, like, unbelievable attention and made us feel at home. It was fantastic. Hanzo tweeted me a few weeks after we'd left New York, and I just thanked him for having the guys treat us so well. And he said, my home is your home, brother. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I just got that as a tweet from Hanzo Gracie.
Hey, that's cool as shit. We were just talking about that. Lopaki had somebody who we value a lot in the sport start following him the other day. And we get the same way, man. We get giddy. Like, we still have fans. You know, we're fans of guys, you know. Certain guys tweet at us or, you know, ask us a question or make a comment. We still get the same way.
Yeah, I hope I never lose that, actually. I hope I never lose that.
I agree.
Yeah, Glory Jim Dubai. When the Glory Jim Dubai started following me, I was like, hell yeah. You ever seen, like, the 20-minute, like, expose that Big Mike does on that facility? Oh, my God, Boyd. It is phenomenal.
Yeah, these are the moments you know you're doing something right.
Yeah.
Did you get a good laugh at all out of hearing Hanzo maybe talk with the accent?
He wasn't actually at the gym when we were there. So I was, we were really looking forward to seeing him. Peter called ahead and tried to hook it up, but he wasn't in New York at the time. So we didn't get to see him personally. So I'll do that the next time for sure and certain.
I just want to know when Kyra's going to be there. Kenzo, I don't know.
Yeah, no. Again, I'm not involved in this conversation either.
Touche, boy. Touche.
Boyd, once again, another great week with you and another great guest. We look forward to next week. We look forward to Thursday night, folks. Don't forget, tweet at Cubicle to the Cage and Draco Sports Inc. is what they are on Twitter. You guys definitely get out there and find them. It's under Draco Sports. Tweet at them. You can win some free gear. They give out stuff every week. We've known a couple of people who actually won by weirdness, but big shout out to them for all they do for the sport. And,
yeah, I think they last 2 weeks they gave out some sweet 16-ounce gloves, brand new off the brand new line. Those guys put a lot of research and development into their gear. So I'm dying to get my hands on some new stuff. But here's a little tidbit for you. I just got an email today. They've designed an absolutely gorgeous Cubicle to the Cage T-shirt that has like the metallic logo against the fence that's in the opening credits, and those are going to be available on the website like maybe later this week.
Oh, cool!
Oh, fantastic!
Super cool! I know I'll be getting one. That's a good, cool shirt. Great thing to support, folks. Get out there, man. This is great. Boyd, Lopaki, like always, thank you guys. Big shout out to all the great sponsors that helped this show. Draco and Jax, thank you guys both. You guys, Eagle.
Awesome.
Later, guys.
Thanks, Boyd.
Bye-bye.